often they'll have it in quite late, and I didn't mean to have it so late. I meant to put it in right away, but everything just seemed to go against me. I just couldn't find get heads and tails. And I don't know anything about writing up things for the paper. My sister would be good at it because she was just a natural composer. She could just write compositions or anything. Mm-hmm. She wrote such a wonderful story, and I'd give anything in the world to have had that. About our trip from California horseback, she and I, you know, to save our horses, we didn't want to leave them there. So we moved up here, and she and I, we rode our horses every step of the way from California to Moscow. It took us just a month. I was only 12, and it was a ball for me, but it was a pretty hard trip on my mother, because she was a widow after my father left, so that's why she had to leave the farm. So we wanted to come up here where all her relatives were. They, most of them had come here from Illinois and settled here, or close here. So we rode up horseback, and she gave that as when she was going to university. She's 4 years older than I am. And when she was going to university, she gave that. I don't suppose she told you that. Well, that's it. She don't tell much. You had to drag it out of her. But she had to have a theme of some kind, you know, and she had to entertain the assembly. It was her turn, and each one had to take their turn Wednesday afternoons when the time comes. So she couldn't think of anything that she could write they'd be interested in unless it would be that. So she kept a diary of that. And I didn't even know she kept a diary. I didn't pay any attention. I was just having a good time. So she gave that diary, kept the diary, and then she could compose. Don, my son, always said Aunt Della should have been a composer and a writer because it's just as natural for her, and it isn't for me at all. So she did, and I never heard it, but I guess it was wonderful. And the kids, big audience she had there from the whole university, you know. And she was kind of nervous, I guess, but they just were quiet as mice, and they were just spellbound. And when it was all over, why one or two got up and said, did you really do that, or did you just make that up? And it kind of provoked her, and she says, oh, mister, I can prove every word of it. And then, you know, just a few days later, that university building burned down, the old university burned. And we could sit up there in our house up on Spotswood and Logan. It's up high, you know, and look right down and watch it burn. We sat in our window and watched it burn. She just cried because everything she had, all her notes and everything were in it, and everything she'd prepared, and this diary and all of that stuff, we lost it all. Well, Mr. Newman up here, he was principal of the schools, and he came to me and he wanted that story to put in the paper, and the paper came to me and they wanted it, and everybody wanted that story. Well, I couldn't do anything about it. They've done that for years. They still do. Because it's gone, and she can't remember it, she says. She said she thought she could find some of the maybe a part of the diary or something, but she never did, and she never tried very hard, I guess. She was just, and she quit the school. She had a nervous breakdown and losing all her work and all her books, and she'd have to go, and she had to walk back and forth, it was a mile, and she was quite frail, and so she just gave it up and didn't go back anymore. And she got married and went out on the farm and lived out there since, so she went to Lewiston. She had a beautiful home there in Lewiston Orchard, just gorgeous.
Well, how do you remember that trip on the way up? Do you remember much about it?
Oh, not like she did, the places we stopped and things like that, you know. I just remember this
long time. Was it a pretty calm trip, or was it pretty adventurous?
Well, in some ways it was awfully hard on my mother, because we had four horses on one big wagon, and her brother drove that team. They didn't want to come that way, but it's the only way we could get the horse. They didn't have carts for taking horses like they do now, and they didn't have good roads like they do now, and they didn't have automobiles like they do now. That was 1903, and I was 12 the day we left there. But we would like to ride, and I'd ridden ever since I was old enough to sit on a horse, and we had a big cattle ranch, and they was here in the Nevada Mountains, or by the foot of them, in a valley, and oh, it's just beautiful. And we could just get all the game and all the fish, anything you wanted. Just go out, maybe just sometimes they come right down in the yard, deer and things, you know. Mm-hmm. And the nicest water, there was three streams run through our farm, and it was a hay country to raise hay for the cattle. And then we had the government range in the wintertime, or in the summertime, while the hay was getting ready to be cut. We didn't raise grains and things like that. And you could go out and get three or four deer. They used my pony a lot for that, because he's just the color of the deer and didn't show in the woods, you know. And they'd come back with poor Johnny. I always called him Johnny. I had two or three, but he was my favorite. Mm-hmm. But they'd have him just covered. You could just see his ears and those deer over him, all over, you know, hanging down. And then they'd, of course, they had no refrigerators in those days or anything like that, you know. And they had to cure the meat and the And they could go down in the swamps and get ducks and geese.
They smoked the meat or canned it?
Yeah, they smoked it, and then we had cellars and then put some of it in brine and made sausage and put it down. And mm-hmm. Oh, my mother was a wonder, and she never done anything like that. It's a little bit of a thing, but she did it all. I'd like to have had a whole history of my mother's life. My life, she lived. It was new. They were homesteading, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And wild animals would come down, you know, right down to your door, and they'd come down and kill the chickens and kill everything. And once in a while the men were gone, and once she went out, and we were little tiny kids, my sister and I, and went out, and there was a great big rattlesnake out there all coiled up, and all the cats and kittens were all coiled up around, you know, in a circle.
Mm.
And they had, you know, they hypnotized him, and he just had his coiled up in that little tongue just a flipping, you know, and making those rattling noises. And my poor mother, she could always use her head in a time of climax. She was so little, and she didn't have a gun, so she went back in and got an axe. There was a wood pile there, and that. And if she didn't chop that thing in two and save all of the cats and dogs and everything, was,
mm-hmm.
See, they just hypnotized those things. They were just as still as if they were dead.
Hmm.
And another time, a mountain lion come down and got one of the calves out of the yard where the cows were, and she was milking. Her father was gone, so she was milking. And she didn't know what to do, so she dumped our big dog. He was just cowering up against her and trying to crowd up, for she didn't know there was one around. He kept crying and pushing up against her, trying to get her to go in the house, you know, and trying to get her the idea. But she didn't know what was the matter, and then she got up and looked around, and there he was, just ready to get one of the calves, you know, in the corral there. And so she just opened the door and let the cows do the best they could, and she got Doc to go with her, and she went tearing to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess after he got one, he was satisfied then. He got enough to eat, so he left. But she just had things like that all the time. I fell on the stove when I was, I was a little thing. I don't know where, of course. I was in a rocking chair and a stick of wood in front of me to keep me from going over on my head, but I did it too hard, and I went over right onto a red hot stove.
Oh.
And oh, I've got awful scars, but and this, my whole chin was just purple for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it just left my skin on the stove. Well, she was 25 miles from a doctor, no roads, no home. Why, she just had to, she was a perfect nurse. She never had training, but that little valley where we lived, everybody died. She had to help lay them out, and every time anybody was going to have a baby, they'd get on a horse and come tearing, no phones, you know, over to our house. And mother'd always get on a horse and go tearing, you know, take care of them. Never charged a thing for anything she ever did. And she was just Aunt Laura to everybody. She certainly deserved a lot of stars in her crown. I hope she to me, she's the most wonderful human being I've ever known, to think what she went through. And she,
why did she decide to move up here?
Well, she thought we ought to have a better chance to get an education, because we were so 25 miles from Alturas. That was the only place we could go to get any education. And Alturas is the county seat of Modoc County. We were in the seat of the old Indian War, in Modoc Indian War. We used to go out and pick up a lot of arrowheads and things, you know. We brought him here, and my boy that stayed with mother to go to school 1 year, because his folks were out so far he couldn't get in. They had a sawmill out here. So she kept him, all for nothing, bed burden, washed for him and everything like she always did. Oh, how goodness, how people complain now about things she had nothing to do with. There was nothing modern in those days. But we bought a home here, and then we went on to school, and she was disappointed that we didn't, well, she wanted us to take music, which we did, and wanted to give us the best she could, you know. She didn't have a lot of money, but she wanted to give us what she could. So that's why we came up here, and we couldn't stay there and run the little farm. You had to hire help, and it was quite a big place, and all the cattle, beef cattle and all, had been sold, and so there wasn't many left to sell.
What kind of things happened on the trip on the way
down? Well, I don't...
Were the horses pretty hard to...
Well, we had an awful time when we crossed down here onto the city. There was a ferry across the river down at Lewiston. There was no bridges then. And the horses were scared of ferries, and they never seen one, never been on one, and some of the horses were quite wild. We were bringing the extra horses up, driving them, Del and I were, but they followed the teams pretty well. When we got to that ferry, why, we got on with the wagons all right, and their horses were so worn out, they didn't have much pep. And they got scared and they broke loose ones and went up the river, you know, just a kiting. And it's mother was just wringing her hands down. We went after them just as hard as we did. We had to get ahead of them and bring them back, you see, or get maybe they'd get in trouble with the city people too. Of course, things weren't modern and nobody thought anything about those things in those days. They saw it every day. But anyway, we finally did get them headed off, and poor mother was just hysterical. She just thought we'd go off into the river, or they would, or something. She just knew we would. But that was the most exciting thing, I guess, that happened. But many times we had to drive maybe 40, I guess, was the worst we ever made. And that's an awful lot for teams.
40 miles?
Uh-huh. Oh. Couldn't come to any water or any place to stay all night and feed the teams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't, Bella could be, she'd be lots better about that if you'd talk to her about it.
I did, but I was just wondering about your reactions to the trip. I knew about her and what she said about it.
She didn't enjoy it like I did.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
not that kind, you know. She likes to stay in the house and cook and do things like that. And well, I was out outside
all
the time.
You enjoyed the camping out?
Oh, yes, I did.
How did your camp outfit work?
Oh, it was wonderful. We had it all planned. Mother planned it all, and she was wonderful. And we had this big wagon, big old, wasn't covered like the prairie schooners, but it was a big outfit like that. And had everything in good shape, and this fellow could shoe the horses if they lost a shoe, and her brother, he was real good at all those things. And he'd take care of the harnesses and horses and everything at night real well. The only thing that worried us a little bit was he liked to take a nip once in a while when he'd get into a town, you know, and once in a while he took too many and it worried Mother terribly. But we made it, and shouldn't have done it. He promised he wouldn't when they left Alturas. He promised her sisters and the rest of her family there that he wouldn't, but he did. They're all dead now, every one of them. There's one of them left. She had 12. There was 12 in her family, and her brothers and sisters. Most of all of them were out here in the West someplace, Spokane and Oaksville and all around here. But anyway, we had to make those extra long trips, and of course everybody and the horses were just completely fagged. And then coming up the hill that same day that we had to cross the ferry was the old highway. It comes up a different way, and it was just nothing but a trail, you might say. And the horses kept giving out on the wagon, big wagon, so we'd have to stop and put in other horses. Of course, we had other horses we were driving, it could be used, you know. So we'd stop and put in some more horses. Maya felt so sorry for them because they were so faithful. But we got here, and I remember when I hit the top of the hill coming down to Lewiston on that south highway, you know, my mother just cried, and she just thanked God, and she was so glad to see Moscow. I guess Della and baby did too, but I didn't let anything bother me then. Then when we got in town, the horses got scattered, and we didn't know what to do. And
Did you know where the family was?
Not exactly, but we didn't have any. We found an awful fellow, nice fellow, Bunyan Starnes, lived out that way. I later was in school with him, and he was about my age, and he come along, and he saw the trouble, and he helped us get the horses together, and then he told us, helped driving me, and he was afoot, but he helped drive me into Moscow, and then we asked where the Howards lived, where mother's sister lived, and he knew right where it was, and so he went with us right there. They had a big barn, and we put the horses and stuff up for the night. And then we had the worst thing of the whole trip was that my mother's brother lived up here in this corner house. He wanted us to bring the horses. He said there was a good price for them here. He says we can bring them. It would be best to bring them with you because we have quite a lot of nice horses. And it was kind of a hobby with us, all of us. But you know, about that time, the bottom went out of horses. There was no call for them, and we just couldn't sell them, and they put them out there on those, stacks of straw. That's all they had all winter, and they were not used to that. They're used to being in the barns and having good, nice hay, you know, fresh alfalfa hay. And some of them died up, and that just broke our hearts, and we couldn't sell them to anybody. Nobody wanted horses because they just couldn't, hay was high and it was hard to get it, and so they just didn't want them. So that was an awful heartbreak for my mother after coming up here to save our horses and then losing them in a way that they never had been treated before. And they got us up here and were so faithful to get us here and then lost them. It was too bad. And I had to sell my pony, and if I'd known that, I never would have come, I guess. I cried and cried, cut off part of his mane, put a ribbon on it, and kept it for years. I took the money and bought myself a watch. The fellow that got him wasn't very good to him either, so that was pretty hard on us. And we have had a pretty, my mother and my sister have had an awful rocky road. She had a hard time here, too. She wanted to work all the time and keep busy.
This is your mother?
Well, she almost had to. We didn't have enough. We hadn't sold the farm, you see, we rented it. And it was after she died that we sold the farm. But Della married a fellow, and they did awfully well. They had one of the best farms, and he was a good farmer, and they never had any children.
Mm-hmm.
So the family run out with my son. He's the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's got children, his grandchildren, and all that. But not like the Beardsley family.
Well, when you went to work for Penny's, you were the first clerk hired. How many other people were working then?
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember that.
Was it a pretty big store?
Or oh, no. It was a small store. It's right down here on the corner where Wiseau's is.
Mm-hmm.
No, the first store here, you can imagine, 1903, this was a dinky little town.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't start a
good
store.
What was a town like?
Oh, I don't know. I'll tell you, Clifford Dopp's the person you better go to if
mm-hmm.
you want to find out any of that stuff.
Yeah. Was Penny, when you first went to work at Penny's, was it still called the Golden Rule, or
mm-hmm.
was it called Penny's?
If you read that, it's all in there.
Right.
Mr. Coffee was one of the, let's see, it's a long story, and it takes a long time. But the best thing to do is read the whole thing and then just cut out what you think. I'd like to have it in here about how successful she was with this overshoe business
mm-hmm.
after she left here. I think that would be interesting to most people. Here, she was at the age of 60 when most of us think of retirement. She wrote this because her children wanted her to leave it. She didn't want to write anything about the past. And they said, this girl said, my brother and I wanted something about what their
mm-hmm.
life was like with a penny company. And she wrote, Mrs. Coffey wrote to me and wanted information about what all the stores that we opened and the different ones that I could tell about because she wanted to get them all in here that he had been associated with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See, these people here are all penny men, every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
This one here.
Mm-hmm.
This is me here, and that's Irie Woodhurst. He just died, was in the paper. His sister was worked for him, and he worked for him here. Then he opened stores when he got so he was new enough, you know, and he was in managed the Kofax store for a long time.
Which one of these is you?
On this end.
Ah.
But Irie wasn't married, and my husband wasn't here, and so we were odd, you know. And every
mm-hmm.
one of those others were couples that had stores here, around here someplace, and I've been trained by Mr. Coffey. And she had this party and dinner for us, and this was taken at the same time. These
mm-hmm.
are the wives. And so, of course, those are the things the girl wants.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll send her this one. I've got two of them, but I don't want her to keep it because Don wants one. And this car, and Don knows the name of it. It is an old timer, but it was a very valuable car. And this back, you know, it's up, and you see the shovels on here?
Mm-hmm.
They confiscated it during the war, you know, and they confiscated it while they were over there and wouldn't let him take it home with him when he left. And he was, a year or two getting it. But this is Mr. Penny's sister here, and that's Mr. Penny. She wasn't married yet, and Mr. Penny's wife was dead. And then these children all belong to, this is Mr. Penny's son, he's dead now too. And this is the chauffeur. But this little girl here was his sister's little girl over in Roseburg. But they all came over there, and I didn't know what to do with all of them. I just had a little five-room house, and I got through it some way. But he finally got his car back, and then I guess it cost an awful lot to run it because it was a big, heavy thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the first cars, 1903, you know, there weren't too many.
Yeah.
It's about her opening the store, but then you can take this if you want to,
okay,
you get through it.
I'll take that.
But I can't do anything about it.
About, did Penny's, did it have pretty much the same kind of stock as it has now?
Oh, yes, only of course down the new stores. Have you seen any of their big new stores?
Mm-hmm.
The one in Spokane, they tell me, is the biggest store up there and the finest.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they've got one north town. I haven't been up, so I don't know. But they say it's just, you can buy anything that you can buy in any big department store.
Mm-hmm.
And these little dinky things here, I think they're disgrace. Mm-hmm. Of course, it wasn't either as big as that one. That's moved a couple of times since then. Store number 10 gave him this opportunity to prove himself. Oh, this was interesting to me, and I think it would be nice to put in the paper, but I don't know how you're going to get it to the paper, and I want it in right away.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk to Miss Clyde about it.
She's so busy, I don't know how she can do it. The company was expanding rapidly.
Well,
the name was changed in 1913, January 1913. The Golden Noodle Store's name was changed to the J.C. Penney Company. Now that you could put in the paper, you know. And was incorporated to Salt Lake City. In Salt Lake City, under the Utah law, with 20 names as incorporators, and Bertram C. Coffey is one of the 20.
Mm-hmm.
So he, you know, he's quite a noted man after all with the Penny Company. And then they finally moved to Lewiston. A lot of this is poetry that Mrs. Coffey wrote. Of course, you wouldn't be interested, but she was a wonderful lady. She, the night Mr. Penny died, she wrote me just a few days later.
Mm-hmm.
She was in bed and just reading, you know, and had her reading lamp on. And she heard that announcement, but she said it just made her sick because she thought mm-hmm. so much of him. Everybody just loved the man. Just marvelous.
Did he come out personally and visit the store here?
Well,
to the
that's
opening?
That's how I got acquainted with him. He visited all these stores as long as he was able to.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he didn't get to go abroad. He did go abroad a lot too, but not the last few years. Because he was 96 years old, 95 or 6 when he died.
Mm-hmm.
And his goal, he wrote me every Christmas in a nice letter, and he wrote me that, well, he'd passed in 95 now. He was just pretty sure he'd make it to 100, and he would have, only he fell and broke his hip.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, he never seemed to recover.
Mm-hmm.
He has a wonderful, wonderful wife, and she writes me darling letters. And Lola Clyde met her at the Mother of the Year banquet in mm-hmm. New York City. They had a big banquet, one of the swankiest places there. I forgot what it was now, she told me. And she had a piece in the paper, too, when she came back. She don't mind putting pieces in the paper, but, you know, I don't like to. I just don't know what I want to put in and what I want to keep out. So
right.
It's kind of hard, and I just want to get somebody to do that for me. That's the main thing. I know it's all right to keep that stuff up there, but I've never been too keen about them up there. I don't know what's the matter with them. I gave them the portieres that I had, and I guess the reason was they had to be cleaned, but I had some big, heavy brown board portieres. Oh, great, big, heavy ones,
mm-hmm.
because it was in their big apartment on Park Avenue there mm-hmm. in New York, Mr. Penny's. And every year when they had to clean the house and redecorate, well, you got new ones, of course, and so they didn't have them cleaned, they just rolled them up. Well, when he was out of business, when we went to Coos Bay, we just moved in this new house we bought. It was a real nice home, big home. But there was big doorways between that and the hall going upstairs, you know, and a curving pipe, stairway. And it's so warm there, you didn't very many have furnaces. We had a good furnace, but often we just used the fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be a little chilly in the evening sitting around. So he said, I think that what I'm going to do when I get home, I guess he noticed the chill, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to send you those portieres. They just fit here. And there was a big doorway there, but it was open, you know,
mm-hmm.
double wall. And he said, I think they just fit here because it had high ceilings like
mm-hmm.
he had there and paneled and all. And so then he measured and bust around there. When not very long after that, here I got this old mine were heavy. I don't know what it cost to send them to a millionaire. It doesn't make much difference. I got this in a big package. And besides that, he had 12 yards of lovely velvet,
mm-hmm.
nice velvet to match. Oh, real good. And it was a golden brown, all beautiful. But the portieres were smoky and soiled that way, you
mm-hmm.
know. They're the only way they'd ever get dirty was smoke. And from the outside, you know, in the
mm-hmm.
big city that way, because he didn't smoke. But they were awful heavy, and I never knew what to do with them, and they were interlined too heavy, you know, not just two thicknesses, but then there was a lining between. Of course, the portieres have to be heavy. And I always dreamed I would use them and thought they were so wonderful, but I didn't. And we moved so many times, and I got tired of just selling a home that I liked. And I said, I'm not going anymore. That's because I stay in a hotel or rent or something, because I don't want to have this trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He'd go on ahead, you know, to get the store going, and then I was left with it.
Well, how many stores did you start?
Well, you see, in those days, you could train a man, and when he was able to run a store, then you could start him out with a new store, and you
mm-hmm.
would get a third interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a third interest in 5 stores, and our one over there was the best one we had over in Coos Bay. because everything was just blooming over there, just getting ready to be good. And so that was, then they made a new law. You couldn't do that anymore. You had, so we had to make a conversion. We had to sell all of our stores, you know, third interest in them. And that's where we got so much money. We had, which then was $500,000, I guess, for our third interest. That was big then. Now, you know, it'd be twice that. Be worth twice that. But he put it all in the stock market. He'd just gone crazy over the stock market, buying and selling big blocks of stock. Because you could buy it for a very small margin in those days. And you could, then you had to pay for it, though, if anything happened. Well, then this, just about 2 years after that, he got in real deep. Then 1929 and 30 is when we had that awful depression, you know. Everybody lost, pretty near everybody lost everything, their homes. And you couldn't even write a check. Couldn't write a check on what you had in the bank. You couldn't get any money out of the bank. You couldn't do anything. You were just tied. And so he had to, they closed down on him, and a lot of margin he owed, made him pay it. They took everything we'd made, and we lost our home, we lost everything we had. Then he lost his health. Never had anything since.
Well, how long did the coffees stay at the penny store here in Moscow?
I guess it's in here someplace. See, they came, they opened the store in 1925, but he died in 35. She was widowed in July 35. Well, I wanted this in the paper, kind of, anyway. However, it was a year. She bought this business of, she rescued a faltering product called the Drizzle Boots by forming a new company to manufacture and distribute this novel foot rain boot. However, it was over a year before the first sale was made, and most ordinary people would have given up and minimized, I can't read very good because I can't really see, their losses. But Mrs. Coffey saw the potential and persisted until Drizzle Boots became a household word. After many years of active participation, and when it was certain the company would survive and be successful, Mrs. Coffey sold her interest in the business and retired. That's when she turned it over. I didn't know she sold it, because her kids are still running it, because they pulled it out. I guess it sold it to them. Mrs. Coffey enjoyed creating poetry, and we don't care about that.
Well, do you know, how long did you work for them in the Moscow store?
Well, I left there in 19... I got married and left the next day. And we went to Roseburg. Let's see. When I was married in 27th of May. My birthday was 22nd, and I was married the 27th of May. Well, I left there in May.
It was in 19...
1913. And it was, so I was only with him about 3 years.
Well, did the store change a lot in those 3 years?
Oh,
did
yes.
Did it grow up quite a bit?
Yes, it did. Of course, Moscow is nothing like it is now.
Was the competition pretty stiff?
Oh, no, just things? Little stores around, you know, they weren't very ambitious. And the same people in business, you have Creighton's, and all, you know, it goes down from generation, and they try to keep everybody else out of here. They don't want anybody but just Davidson and Creighton's. They've run this store, this town, for years.
Well, did that make competition pretty hard to bring a new store like Penny's?
Well, I don't remember about that part of it, because we never discussed that, but people that do put penny stores, working people especially, like to trade there. And it was nice for children and for bedding and laundry and stuff like that. It was good, but if you wanted anything nowadays, and then when we got our store in Coos Bay and we got prospering and had a nice new building and got a big store, well, I could get the nicest kind of clothes, but you can't hear these places. I don't know what's the matter with dresses and things. Well, I'm kind of disappointed. I thought you were going to be with the Idahoan too.
Well, we do work with the Idaho sometimes.
But I'd like to have this put in. But
Let's just see how much more information we can get, and then
well, I can't give any more than what's in here. That's all I've got. I thought that was all I needed. That's all I need to put in the paper anyway. Well, I don't know anything more than what I've told you. I forgot all the stuff that went on many years between now and then that I can't remember. I wasn't here either, you know. I couldn't tell you anything about what happened there.
What were your wages when you first started working?
I don't even